Craig Hoffman.
That's something we have to discuss with our higher-ups.
The Hoffman Show.
We can't just say it on the air and be like,
I wish you could proclaim it. I wish it worked like that.
We all get raises!
On the Team 980 and the Odyssey app.
Come on. If I rule the world, imagine that. I free all my sons.
Hoffman Show, Team 980. We're always live on the free Odyssey app. 4 o'clock every single day, we talk to an expert. And my expert today not only is an expert in the Washington Commanders and is going to be a part of the pre- and post-game coverage tomorrow on NBC Sports Washington, but also happens to be an expert in media and team relations. Let's get to Not My Beat.
Today's top story, from the perspective of someone who's there.
You are looking live.
It's just in.
Not My Beat.
The one, the only, Mitchell Tischler joins us from NBC Sports Washington, the Commanders Talk podcast. Mitchell, good to talk to you. How's your Friday going?
It's a beautiful day outside. Got to run around with the dog. Couldn't ask for much more.
That's fantastic. I do want to talk football with you and what you expect to see tomorrow, but you were actually one of the first people I thought of in this because you've had a bunch of different roles with NBC Sports Washington over the years, but a lot of them have come with dealing directly with the team. Obviously, there is an inherent partnership. There's a business agreement between NBC Sports Washington and the team. There's a content agreement, and you are often the person in the very middle of that. Yet you are also someone, especially as the podcast that you guys do with you, JP, and Pete has grown over the past couple of years. Like, you're someone that gives opinions. You're someone that has strong takes. And how have you tried to think about managing that kind of relationship that you've had, both handling like private sensitive stuff, like the, you know, you edit the mic'd up segments, for instance, and that's a big responsibility and there's a big trust there, but also giving opinions and feeling free to do so?
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest thing is, you know, no one at the team has ever, it's about being fair is what it is. It's, you're allowed to speak freely without taking personal shots, and I think that's the biggest thing. And I think when you look at kind of this, you know, story that's been circling around with the Carson Wentz question, that question has been asked by every reporter, and it would be malpractice to not ask that question at this point in Carson Wentz's career. You know, it's just the manner in which it's asked. It was theatrically, it's, you know, a little bit bombastic and over the top. It's, you know, it's there's different ways to approach, you know, interviews and approach, you know, dealing with the team, especially early on in a relationship with a new player or new coach. You know, it's not that you're treating them with kid gloves, but you want to treat them fairly and to go at somebody, you know, in a manner with which, you know, in a manner that's borderline, you know, rude, that you wouldn't necessarily, when you're talking to them, you know, face to face, not on camera, wouldn't, you know, go at them like that. That's kind of, you know, where that lay.
I think we have a slight, like, we see that slightly differently in terms of where maybe Scott was, but rather than spend time like hashing out like, oh, it was an 8 and 6 is appropriate. Oh, man, I think it was only a 6. Like, with that said, like, what did you make of Jason's response? Because I would assume that you think that is also disproportionate.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, Jason's response is what made this a story. Locally in D.C., Carson Wentz has given us that answer 100 times. Every time he's been asked that question, he's given essentially the same answer. And Jason's response is what, you know, is what made it a story and what made it, you know, as big as it is. And I don't know that, I think, you know, I think his response was a little disproportionately over the top, just like I think, you know, Scott's question was a little disproportionately, you know, aggressive. I don't know, whatever the word you want to use is. So I don't think that, you know, in a world where, you know, there's a lot of wrong, I don't know that two wrongs make a right here.
Mitch Tischler, Washington Football Talk podcast, NBC Sports Washington with us. So I saw the new promo with you, Pete, JP, Jordan Giorgio. Where they got you on this pregame, and are you going to wear that sweet burgundy jacket tomorrow?
Preseason is polo shirts, so no sweet burgundy jacket. Mm. We do a podcast hit. I think we've done it now. This is going to be the third or fourth year in a row. Somewhere in the middle section of the show starts at noon with Santana Moss, Jordan Giorgio, Brian Mitchell, and then me, Pete, and JP will be on site at FedEx Field. JP will be doing a bunch of the insider reporting there. But we do hit, in past years, we've done, you know, something either gambling related or one player to watch or kind of a one-off take from each of us, especially since, you know, we've been kind of at every practice watching every minute of this preseason.
Yeah. So if we go the player to watch way tomorrow, who's the guy that you are most interested to see and how much do you expect to see them?
If we put Carson Wentz off to the side, because clearly he is the most important player to watch, and, you know, we've seen a lot of different things in training camp, but I think you got to, you know, give him credit because since they put on pads, he hasn't thrown an interception in whatever it's been, 5 days or so. He's clearly the most important player to watch, but Jahan Dotson has to be somebody that you're excited about. You know, Curtis Samuel can say that he's healthy all he wants, but until we see him practice 2-3 days in a row, and ultimately until we see him play in 1-2-3 games in a row, Jahan Dotson's going to have a really big role in this offense, and he's looked every bit the part. Of course, it's easy to look every bit the part when you're kind of playing your own guys who aren't going to try and take your head off, and, you know, they're going to try and, you know, you're trying to let everybody learn as well as, you know, make plays on the defense. So, you know, Jahan is going to be interesting to see what he brings and how much he's able to kind of work opposite of Terry McLaurin and help get him help get him open.
Defensively, James Smith-Williams seems like he's got the inside track and is clearly the favorite to start opposite of Montez Sweat week one with Chase Young out. So let's take James out of it. Let's actually take Casey Tuhill out of the mix as well because he seems like a lock to make the team. Who else at that edge position do you think could wind up making this squad?
I think one of the guys who I don't know that necessarily getting talked about enough is F.A. Obada, who might be more of a defensive tackle, but he's going to play both tackle and end. I think when you look at, you know, third and shorts, you know, run obvious run downs, you're going to see a lot of Daron Payne and John Allen in the middle. And F.A. Obada is a guy who can line up at that end position and really get some stuff done. And then when you go and look at obvious passing downs, he's a guy who can play on the inside and really get after the quarterback and use some of that speed and quickness to disrupt the guard and center blocking schemes. I think when I look at the defensive line, F.A. Obada is kind of that Swiss Army knife that is kind of rolling under the radar. He played with Ron in Carolina. He's part of the international pathway program coming over from London via Nigeria. He's had a super interesting story and kind of a path to the NFL, but he's really kind of carved out a niche, and especially on this defensive line, I think F.A. Obada is someone that can make a difference.
Do you expect Obada, David Bada, like all these guys that are kind of on that same line of the depth chart to play most of the rest of the game after the starters and maybe mixing and matching and them trying to see different combinations? Or do you think that, you know, based off what you've seen in training camp, that they'll, you know, there'll be like a line of twos that eventually those guys get out and we're on to the threes?
I think there's a pretty clear line of kind of ones and twos who will see most of the, you know, first quarter, I would guess. And you're looking at the Montez Sweat, Daron Payne, John Allen, Casey Tuhill, F.A. Obada, Jason Williams, kind of Fedarian Mathis to that extent, guys who are kind of obviously are more likely going to make the team. I think Fedarian Mathis might get a little more work just so that he can kind of work into the NFL and see where he is. But that second quarter and second half of the game is going to be really interesting for guys like Shaka Toney, William Bradley King, you know, 2 seventh-round draft picks from last year who are going to be fighting for that kind of second string, you know, defensive end position until Chase Young comes back. And then on the interior, you have Daniel Wise, the kid out of Kansas, and David Bada, who is another international pathway program player who got a roster exemption last year to be on the team. He can only use that for one season, so he's fighting for one of those back end roles. And then a guy who's kind of flashed a little bit in camp has been Jacob Penasiak. He's wearing number 91, so obviously everyone immediately starts thinking that Ryan Kerrigan thing, but he's a guy who rolls into camp with a mohawk and is going 110% every single snap, every single play, and he's been out there making some plays. So he's somebody I would definitely keep an eye on the second half of that game tomorrow. Also,
Last question for Mitch Tischler of NBC Sports Washington. You mentioned that, you know, some guys will be out in and out pretty quick. We obviously know that. Where do you expect Jamin Davis to be in that rotation? Because he's kind of like he's playing in some packages. He's not playing in others. Clearly, they need to get him reps. How long do you think we could see Jamin tomorrow?
So I think when you kind of look big picture at the linebacker position, you're going to see Cole Holcomb as with the ones. And I think you're going to see a little bit of a combination of David Mayo and Jamin Davis with the ones. And when they kind of make that move towards the twos, you won't see Cole Holcomb anymore. But I think you will continue to see that combination of David Mayo and Jamin Davis in there. And then I think Kalik Hudson slides in for Cole Holcomb. So when you're looking at kind of ones and twos, if you're going to break it down kind of that linearly, you're going to see Jamin Davis and David Mayo probably play most of the first quarter and into the second quarter before they start moving towards that second group of guys, and that's the Trey Walkers and Milo Eiflers and Nate Garys of the group that are going to be kind of fighting for that fourth, fifth, you know, linebacker spot on this roster.
Mitch Tischler, you can catch him pregame tomorrow on NBC Sports Washington and, of course, the Washington Football Talk podcast. Mitchell, always good to chat, my friend. We will do it again soon. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Again, Mitch Tischler, you can follow him on Twitter @_MitchTischler. Coming up next here on the Hoffman Show, caught up with my good friend Jamie Erdahl. She is the brand new host of Good Morning Football. She worked the sidelines for CBS, not only for their SEC coverage, but some NFL games and March Madness over the past 4 years. And Jamie and I actually go all the way back to when we were interns together at ESPN. And so let's have a chat about a conversation that we had when we were interns that kind of preview Jamie's career and, of course, what she thinks about the Commanders. She actually has a player on the Commanders that she covered when that player was in college that she loves. And you will hear that, who that is, next here on the Team 980.
The Hoffman Show on the Team 980 and the Odyssey app.
Hoffman Show on the Team 980. We're always live on the free Odyssey app. And if you're not subscribed to our podcast feed, you miss out on a lot. Because at least once a week, we do a little bit of extra, little stuff that you won't hear on the radio. We call it That's a Podcast because sometimes you got more than you got on the radio. And well, that's a podcast. And this afternoon, sat down and had a great chat with my good friend Jamie Erdahl, who is the new host of Good Morning Football. We chatted for almost 30 minutes, and that entire podcast is up right now in the Hoffman Show feed on the Odyssey app, in Apple Podcasts, in Spotify, wherever it is that you get your pods. But we'll give you a little snippet here on the radio. Here's my chat, at least a little bit of it, with Jamie. I do remember vividly a conversation that we had. I think it was in the parking lot of a hardware store as one of our friends like ran inside to go get something.
Yeah.
And talking about that you weren't sure at that stage going into our senior years of college that you wanted to get into being an on-air person because being a woman in this business can be brutal. Being in this business in general can be brutal. And you just weren't at that point convinced that like, this is a career path that I want to pursue, despite how talented you were and how bright your future was in it. When did you ultimately decide, like, yeah, I'm going to try this out? And have there been points along the way where you've looked back and been like, yeah, that was a good decision?
Well, you have a good memory because I, too, remember that conversation. And I also remember that feeling that I had at that age. And I think what that was stemming from, honestly, was we were at ESPN at the time and we were watching a lot of on-air talent operate, and I was watching a lot of the women, and it was a very intimidating setting for me to be in at the time, because there's a lot that goes along with being on air. And I think I was seeing some of the parts that I just wasn't sure about if I wanted to commit to that, whether it be always being concerned about like hair, makeup, what you're wearing on the air. Like, you know me, I'm like kind of a tomboy. Like I like to keep it casual, if you will. And that part of the lifestyle of the job was really hard for me to project and think that I wanted to be a part of. Now, what I didn't struggle with was whether or not I wanted to be in sports television. And you and I both know more than anybody, it's like that internship summer at ESPN can be addicting, or it can be like, I want nothing to do with this industry. And you and I have definitely gone down the addicting path of like, this is, we want nothing. We can't do anything else. Like, this is the only thing that I could do with my life at this point. And so really my struggle there was, do I want to be on air or do I want to be a producer and do I want to produce content and be, you know, be doing cutting highlights for SportsCenter? I mean, that's the stuff that like fired us up at the time. And I just always wanted to be around sports. And I just was always worried that if you got into being some high level on air talent, not that, you know, 10 years ago, I was projecting myself to be that. It was more that like, I was scared it was going to like ruin me essentially. Like how, you know, I wanted to stay true to myself and I was nervous that there were parts of the job that just weren't meant for my personality, but I'm really proud of how I've been able to kind of make it my own. And the fact that I have found myself in this job today that I can wear like jeans and sneakers. And I'm like making fun of my co-hosts. We're like ripping about football and fantasy football. And it's just like, I can't believe I have like found this thing that just is so true to myself.
So what was your reaction and kind of what happened when you got word that Good Morning Football was a possibility? Like, how did that come about? Obviously, Kay was super popular and was doing a great job. And then all of a sudden, it's like, whoa, Kay Adams is going to leave Good Morning Football.
Yeah.
When did you find out that you replacing her was a possibility? And then what was your reaction when you found out you got the job?
So we have the same agent. And so okay. He, obviously, before, I guess anybody else did, probably is the best way to say it. And he, you know, to make long story short, to mention Sam again, his work takes him to New York a lot. And he was gone. His travel was picking up just so much after travel was allowed again. And so Josh Levy called me and said, he told me, what if I said your name in a meeting for a show that would bring you to New York City? How would you feel about that? And I was like, I think Sam had been gone for like 10 days at this point, like hadn't seen the girls, you know, it was just really, really challenging. And I was like, that'd be great. And so he's like, oh, well, Kay's going to leave Good Morning Football. And I was like, oh my gosh. Like my immediate reaction, I'm really not trying to like boost myself up, was like, I couldn't do that job. I know I could do the job, but I didn't immediately think that I would be like the most qualified for it. Mostly because having been away from the NFL for a few years, I just could think of so many other women that are in the NFL world that would be great. But kind of when I had that gut feeling of like, why would they pick me? It made me want to go after it even harder. And, you know, a lot of conversations had to be had with various executives from various networks and whatnot. But the point being, it is an absolute unicorn of a show. CBS was incredibly gracious to allow me to go do this show. And let me grow this way. And I'm so grateful for them for doing that. So when I found out I got it, I was just like, oh, giddy up, man. Like there is just back now. Like, because it's also this thing, Craig, where like I was going through these meetings and I'm like hearing about the show and the nature of the show and having watched it. And it's like, it's not really an interview process as much as it is like you're trying to convince them that you are the right person for the job. And so I'd get off the right. Zoom and I'd be like, I think I was pretty damn convincing there. Like I would hire me, you know? And so, then I was like building myself up enough that like, man, the letdown would have been so frustrating. So I was so thrilled. And then the hard work began really. Like we had to move in like 6 weeks time, find a place to live, whatever, get childcare set up. That was the hard part. I thought it was hard to get the job. The hard part was like executing of doing the job.
Right. Right. And not just doing the job, getting life in order so that you can do the job.
Yeah, right. And not acting like a fool when I get up there, because like I said, it had been 4 years since I had done NFL sideline. You know, some of the characters have stayed the same, but, you know, the coaches and the coordinators, my God, it was like spider webs across the NFL. I couldn't believe how much movement there had been since I was there last. So it was a really cool moment for me professionally. I'm so happy it worked out the way it did.
Jamie Erdahl, the new host of Good Morning Football on NFL Network with us, Hoffman Show on the Team 980 and always live on the free Odyssey app. So you actually now touched on something that I wanted to get to in terms of the personnel. You have different coordinators, different coaches, things. But I would imagine after so many years in the SEC, considering how many players that conference sends to the NFL, you're seeing a lot of familiar faces. So what's it been like to all of a sudden be talking about the same players you were talking about previously now in their NFL roles? Does that come up a lot, or is it something that, like, oh, every once in a while it's like, oh yeah, I remember when I talked to him at Alabama, Florida, wherever?
Totally. Every day, pretty much every day, I say in a break, am I talking too much about these SEC guys? I say it to Peter and Kyle, and they both look at me and they're like, no, the the angle you have from it is unlike anyone else that could provide this insight. And it's not like I'm trying to drive home a point from like a school or a conference where you're like rolling your eyes. Like, we get it. You went to that school. Like, I don't even go to a school in the SEC. Like, legitimately, they're everywhere. Like, you can't not like look at a roster, or like if we have like a category of guys and we have to pick a guy to talk about, like, normally any position, one of the guys is going to be from the SEC, and one of those guys is that I covered in the last 4 years. So I am almost like more cognizant of it than I think they love hearing it. I'm nervous that I'm overdoing it. But you can't help it. They're so talented. Like, I can't, it's inevitable. And it is, I mean, it's, I love it. Like, that Alabama wide receiver group that's come out over the last couple years. I mean, those guys are so talented. And then to have, you know, Tua and Mac and Jalen, I mean, it was just like, it's ridiculous to think that those teams were as good as they were. Oh my God. And the Georgia defensive guys, they're everywhere. I mean, it's like, it's insane. It's insane.
You don't got to tell me, like, we got Allen, we got Payne, we got all these dudes. They just drafted Fedarian Mathis.
Yes.
Like, literally half the Commanders.
I love Phil Mathis. Oh my gosh. Oh.
Tell us more about Phil Mathis.
He came in last year on their senior night. And so we met with a bunch of the guys, and he is just, his personality takes up the whole room. I mean, he is one of the most personable, bright, biggest smiles, committed to the game, great teammate, but just like, you want to sit and talk with him for an hour and just chop it up. And he's like, not a guy where like it has to be about him all the time. Like, we legitimately, like, Gary was telling stories, Phil was asking him about stories. It was just like, it was just one of those conversations where he left the room, we were like, that's a great guy right there. And you really want him to succeed. And I feel the same in your division about N'Kobe Dean. Like, I was heartbroken for him that he fell as far as he did. I was thrilled for any team that was going to get him. Kirby Smart said, best hands in the SEC. All right, that might be a little extreme, but he has to say that.
A college football coach exaggerating a little bit? No,
right,
way.
Exactly. You know, so like a Phil Mathis, like, I am such a fan. I was, again, it was just any team he went to, he was going to make the room better.
Jamie Erdahl, Good Morning Football with us. How much are the Commanders on your guys' radar on a national level right now?
Well, Mike Garafolo was just in on our show today, and he picked that game as the one he wanted to watch this weekend. He had been at training camp, so I think he knows those guys pretty well. But we had Jahan Dotson on the show this week, and wow, what a bright and interesting young man, and just really looks like he, again, we actually, in the interview, we talked with him about just how comfortable he looks, like, physically on the screen. He just looks like he belongs in a place, and we played this clip of him on the show pre-draft, and he looked just uptight, shoulders were in his ears, and he was trying to sell himself to one of the 32 teams, trying to get hired. I get that. But now he's at training camp, and he's wearing his team gear, and he was, you know, talking so highly of his relationship that he has with Carson Wentz now and the potential there. And I think, you know, the NFC East is just like, what is happening? Like, it is up for grabs. It is up for grabs. There's potential there for any team to run away with it.
Continued success with the show. Good luck getting moved into the house, since you
Thank
mentioned
you.
It. And we will talk soon, my friend. I certainly hope
absolutely.
That we can do this again as you continue to settle in to the role over the course of the season.
Thank you. I appreciate you. You're the best.
Jamie Erdahl, everybody. Good Morning Football weekdays on NFL Network. Watch it each and every morning if you want good times, laughs, and football. And if you want more of that conversation, head to our podcast feed, The Hoffman Show, wherever you get your podcast. All right, Linnell is on his way in next. I've heard he disagrees with me on stuff. Buckle up, kiddos.
The Hoffman Show. Here we go. Light it up on the Team 980 and the Odyssey app.
Hoffman Show on the Team 980. We're always live on the free Odyssey app. Again, if you want the full conversation with Jamie Erdahl from Good Morning Football on the NFL Network, you can check the podcast feed, Hoffman Show. That's a podcast. It's up right now. Linnell's in studio. What up, big fella? How are you?
Am I going?
Yeah, I hear
you. Hey, what's up, Gregors? How you doing, buddy?
I'm good, man. Love that your confidence is just super high right now.
What do you I'm just happy to be here, bro. My Friday appointment with Craig Hoffman. I've been looking forward to it.
It's a good time. By the way, Clint Yates is going to be at the top of the hour. So looking forward to that conversation. But, Linnell, you obviously saw Jason Wright's tweet. I know you were listening to my reaction of it, my interactions with callers, what I said off the top of the show, all that kind of stuff. Where are you at with this story or with my take on this story?
I'm kind of torn, I guess, is the right word to use. I do have a problem with Jason Wright trying to restrict access over the tone of a question. But I do have a problem with the same question being asked over and over and over again. It is August 12th. That same question about him being booted out of Indianapolis and Philadelphia, like when does that become old news? Why don't we worry about creating new narratives and new stories? We've got 2 weeks of training camp to talk about, and his departure from Philly and Indianapolis is still being discussed. They've had, ever since we acquired him, to talk about that. Let's talk about something new.
That's an interesting take. I think that there's something there. I think there's merit to that. I do think it lets Jason off the hook entirely, because this isn't
Jason's
really
doing them a favor. Jason's doing Channel 7, Channel 4, and Channel 9 a favor. You think that in access to Aaron Rodgers the way that Scott Abraham and them have access to Carson
it's like
Wentz?
It's like that in every market.
Is it though? Like to every day?
The training camp is when you get interviews. Like that's how it works. You know, when I was in radio in Dallas, we would always have the biggest players when we were out at training camp. And in fact, you want to talk about favors and access and all that kind of stuff. If it was like a lot of I actually had this criticism for years when I was with a company who had the rights and with companies that didn't. And we currently now, thanks to the new agreement, we no longer have the rights. I hate the way the Commanders run training camp in terms of radio stations, because in Dallas, even though one station, it happens to be, I think, still our sister station, 105.3 The Fan, is the home of the Cowboys. They broadcast live from training camp every single day. Guess who else did? Every other radio station. And when I used to work for another radio station, we were out there. There's actually three major stations in Dallas, 103.3 ESPN, actually that's the station I work for, and frankly, they're not that big anymore. They've kind of died off over the last couple of years. But The Ticket, which is like the monster legacy station in Dallas, and 105.3, our station, they're all at training camp. So not only, is that the norm, and Jason and the PR staff and whoever's not doing any favors, they're actually more restrictive than a lot of places that I know, which I don't even begrudge them that. Like, if they want to do a solid for their rights holder, like, I actually don't think that's out of line. It's not how I would do it, because I would want more attention. I want more people out there. I want more eyes on my training camp. I want more people thinking, this is a place I gotta be. But that's how they do it. So, no, I don't think that it's like they're all of a sudden doing the TV stations a solid because they get a one-on-one with the starting quarterback one time per year.
Do you not have an issue with Scott choosing to post that clip of an 11-minute interview? You don't think he was very intentional?
He was, but I don't blame him for it. Like, that's the business. He's in the business of getting viewers to watch his interview. And here's the other thing. Like,
That's a very easy route to go. I'm sure I've watched the entirety of the interview. There are other places and other quotes and questions that he could have chosen that would have gotten just as many clicks. That isn't the easy route to go. I thought it was kind of lazy. Like,
I think that here's what I would say to that. Clickbait is only clickbait because it works. And that's not on Scott. That's a reflection of all of us. That's a reflection of the fans. And by the way, like other media and the entire media ecosystem in which we live. The reason clickbait works is because that's what people want. Because it invokes emotion. Like, some of it is just human nature, and like there's literal psychological studies into this kind of stuff. But at the end of the day, like, that also, all of this talk, like, I hear you. And if you want to, like, try to hold Scott to some higher standard and be like, we should do better as a media, like, good luck with that crusade. One, it's not going to work. But two, it also completely misses the point of the story, which is that it's not the team president's job to fight that fight. If you had come in without Jason doing what he did and been like, hey, I'm tired of people asking Carson about this stuff. Like, that's a different and interesting conversation. And I'm not trying to undercut that. But the reason we're talking about this today, by the way, when we talked about it yesterday, when Scott posted it, never even mentioned this stuff. We talked about the first question and answer, which I thought was interesting in terms of his response to the inaccuracy and the narrative about his inaccuracy. Whether
and that's
he's paying
a whole
attention.
That's a whole other thing.
Right.
In
all that
itself.
Kind of stuff. But the reason we're talking about this today is because the team president decided to play the world's worst PR director on Twitter. That's not his job. And for the day before the Washington Commanders' big debut, the first day, the first game that they ever are going to play in those uniforms, that's what he's doing? Why?
I can't disagree with you on that. But from Jason and the team's perspective, you don't think they're growing tired and frustrated of being bullied by the DC media? Everything that they put out.
Who's bullying?
Everything that they put out from the Commanders gets met with backlash, and they're made fun of, and they're told that they're not doing their jobs correctly. Everything that they do.
What have they done that's good?
This is real laughter coming from me. I'm just here to talk back with you. I don't know what to say to that.
No, you're here to make an argument that makes any sense, and don't tell me that that's the counter argument when it doesn't make any damn sense. Like, if I say something that is negatively reflecting on you, or that negatively portrays you, and it's true, is that a problem because I said it or that it's true? Not to say that there aren't situations where I'm like, or you could be like, whoa, hey, we're doing, that's private. I told you that because we're boys. And like, I'm not talking about like spilling tea. I'm not talking about any of that kind of stuff. I'm talking about if you were to do something, like if you were to have a terrible take on the radio, like you might be in the middle of right now. And I call that out. Is that a reflection of me or of you? Because if it's a reflection of you, that's on you, not on me, especially if it's my job to point that stuff out. So if the Commanders are complaining about us saying stuff that's negative about the team, that is merely a reflection or a regurgitation of facts about the team, the facts reflecting negatively on them,
the fight
is
song.
On them, not us.
The fight song was met with laughter and people made jokes about it.
Are we
what
supposed
is
to
wrong
say
with
it's
them
good
doing
if we think
that?
It's terrible?
There's a way that it's all about tone for me. And it all comes off as like everything the Commanders does, we're just going to shoot it down. That's how it comes off to me.
They consist, like, they've earned that. Because for 25 years.
Has Jason Wright earned that? Has Jason Wright and this new
Jason
staff earned that?
To come in with a clean slate?
How does he not? How is that fair to him? Why is he being held responsible for his predecessor's work?
Because
that
he
has
continues
nothing to do
it.
With him.
Because he continues it. Because he hasn't actually changed very much. The same kind of crap that they did under previous regimes, they've done again. Their sewage pipes are still bursting. They're screwing up number retirements. They're misspelling legends' names on the big board. Their fight song is the same fight song with different words when they had a chance to change it. And everybody still hates the name, even if it's for a different reason. You don't get credit for doing something different if you actually haven't done anything different. Just because you're a new person and you just got here.
All fair points you just made. I disagree because I don't think that's fair to be judging Jason Wright and the new stuff that
okay,
they're
Linnell,
doing.
Okay, I'm asking you a question.
Go
Do
ahead.
You think Jason Wright's doing a good job?
I think he's been fair.
What have you? I'm asking this honestly. What have you liked that Jason's done? Because I have things that I like that he's done.
I like. I'm probably in the minority. I like the name Commanders. I like the
we
new
are
uniforms.
The Commanders.
I like the alternate uniforms and things like that. I
love the uniforms. I will give you that. I love the uniforms, love the helmets.
I think it's cool that they're trying to keep some of the old tradition with the fight song. Like that, how can we slam them for that? For trying to...
Because the fight song's a little dated and it sounds like it's from 1920. And I think this was an opportunity to maybe up it. And also, I think that there is... Like, if you admit that you're changing the name, and this is a little more serious, right? A little deeper. But if you admit that you're changing the name because it's racially insensitive, to know that fans in your stadium are going to sing the old lyrics, which is absolutely going to happen tomorrow.
Yeah.
That's you gotta like, if you're doing it for harm reduction, which is what you're doing, then you gotta complete the job. So I think there is both, like, I think it's a little hokey, if I'm being completely honest. And you guys, longtime fans who love the fight,
I feel
songs,
like
you kill
that
me
too,
for that. Like that's fine. And sometimes, sometimes it's like, yo, yeah, but it's our hokey, and like that's fine too. So I think I don't particularly like it, but that's like number 152 on my list.
The fan activations that they're going to do for each game. Like, I love that they're doing that. Like, they're trying to take steps in the right direction. It's a tough job. It's probably the most non-attractive team president job in all of professional sports. And he is tasked with coming in here and cleaning up 25 years of ineptitude. Nobody required him to do.
Okay, so but here's the thing: one, no one required him to do it, and two, giving him leeway doesn't mean he gets to beg for credit. That means you better know what you signed up for, and if people are crushing you along the way, you have to take it. Because like I was actually thinking about trying to make an analogy out of this, and the analogy I came up with is like politics, right? If you're a politician, your job is to, and like, whether it is, and I'll take two polar opposite sides of the same issue, right? Healthcare. There are, on the far one side, there is Medicare for all, government provided healthcare that is paid for in taxes, et cetera. And the other side is completely privatized healthcare where the government is not involved at all and it's completely run by private companies. And if you are a politician, your job is to make the case for the one that you believe in and make that thing popular. Your job is to not be a pundit and tell me whether it's popular or not. That's the pundit's job. And in this particular scenario, we're the pundits. And Jason Wright's the politician. Jason Wright's job is to make the thing cool. Jason Wright's job is to make the thing make money. Jason Wright's job is not to police the punditry that those of us that are paid to give opinions are giving. His job is to do the job well enough to change our minds, not tell us to change our minds.
Fair. Fair. The bigger issue I've had with the whole thing, though, and I've kind of like touched on this with you a little bit, this like narrative that's been shaped around Carson Wentz through 2 weeks of camp, that he is completely inaccurate, that he is not performing well out there. Yes, I understand. It is the job of the reporter to go out there and report on what you see. But you can't tell me, reading people's stuff, that there does not seem to be a negative tone in energy around Carson Wentz. Like, they're trying to continue and follow up on the narrative that was created in Indianapolis and Philadelphia. He has a fresh slate here. Why are we going out and writing hit pieces on quarterbacks after 2 weeks of training camp, talking about routes versus air? Do you realize how little that has to do with football? What you think Tom Brady doesn't one hot balls in training camp? You don't think that happens around the National Football League? It does, and you know it does. Like, come on, it's practice.
I don't know how many balls in recent years Tom Brady skipped on air.
Tom Brady probably a terrible example.
Right. Well, no, we got to work on your example, bro, because you're making good points and then being like, well, that's a good point that you just made that I completely undercut myself. But that on Carson and the merits of this here, that is actually an interesting discussion as we start to transition some to the football. And we will have it next on the Team 980.
It's the Hoffman Show on the Team 980 and the Odyssey app. Let's go!
Hoffman Show on the Team 980, always live on the free Odyssey app. So we're talking about all kinds of different stuff with this Jason Wright situation, but at the center of it is a conversation about whether or not Carson Wentz is actually playing well. Now, obviously, the center of the Jason Wright story is the fact that the team president inserted himself into that conversation in a way that is completely inappropriate for a president of business operations. He's not a president of football operations. He should stay away from the football operation and any discussion of it. And that's probably why I would bet money on the fact that Ron Rivera's not excited about this entire conversation. But Linnell, you, as someone who's been out there every day, you actually think that the narrative around Wentz at this point is not fair to Carson Wentz. Explain.
For one, I just think it's irresponsible to try to make declarations on a guy, especially the quarterback position, after 2 weeks of training camp. There are so many nuances about the quarterback position. He's learning a new offense. He's working with new receivers. Has there been days where his accuracy has been erratic? Yes. But there have also been days, and I'll be even more specific than anybody else could probably get, dating back to last Thursday. That's Thursday's practice, Friday's walkthrough, Saturday's practice at FedEx, Monday's practice in Ashburn, dating back all the way to today. Carson Wentz has been sharp, and they have turned a corner, it looks like. Why are we highlighting the negative things that we see in routes versus air, which is what some of the people that are writing stories or what they're writing about, talking about him one-hopping a ball to Terry McLaurin in routes versus air? Derek Carr probably does that at Raiders camp. They're not writing full hit pieces about Derek Carr off of that. It's almost as like we're trying to continue the narrative that followed him from Indianapolis and Philadelphia. Let's evaluate it as something new, because it is something new. And
well,
if you're just reporting on what your eyes
see. Hold on. That's where I got to stop you, though, because Carson Wentz has a track record, and I don't think that it's like respectful of the audience to forget it. Like, Carson Wentz didn't come here as a rookie. Carson Wentz isn't Josh Allen coming out of Wyoming as like, wow, he's had some inaccuracies. But let's see what it's like at the NFL level. Per Warren Sharp's metrics, Carson Wentz is the least accurate NFL in the quarter, or the least accurate quarterback in the NFL the last 2 years. So when he then comes in for the end of the spring and the start of the summer and is inaccurate, where we've been told like, oh no, we went after receivers with bigger catch radiuses, and we think schematically we can set him up with throws that he likes to succeed, and it's not happening. It's fair to point that
that's
out.
Where I have to. That's where I'm going to stop you. It's not that it's not happening. That's the whole point I'm trying to make. It is happening, and it's been happening on a more regular and routine basis since Thursday. So let's talk about that just as much as we talk about the inaccuracies.
I think we have, though. I think every day the last week, at least on this show, it's been like Carson Wentz is performing better. Hey, Carson, maybe starting to turn a corner.
Kudos to you for doing that on this show.
It'd be really nice if Carson and Terry could get on the same page, but this is where Terry missing all that time could come back to bite them a little bit. And what we're going to find out is if it does, because there just aren't enough reps available, or if it won't, because while it hasn't happened yet, there's still a long time to go before the regular season. This is the last day I can say this, we still haven't played a preseason game yet. And I feel like that is part of the narrative. It's like, yeah, he's been wildly inaccurate. That is consistent with what he has done in the past, especially when he faces pressure.
What does wildly inaccurate mean? What do you mean when you say wildly inaccurate? Because like that's where like my issues kind of come with it. It's the tone. To say someone's wildly inaccurate would make you think like there aren't completions happening in practice.
That's fair. Maybe I could do. I will give you that. I will do a better job of describing Carson Wentz's inaccuracy. By good NFL quarterback standards, Carson Wentz is not accurate.
Fair.
And hasn't been for 2 years.
And know that. Yeah.
Here's to hoping. And I don't say that with malice moving forward. I don't say that with hope moving forward that continues. I very much hope that it doesn't. And I think that that they are trying to do things schematically, and we've seen, obviously, as more of the offense gets added, Carson has done a little better. He's faced less pressure since the pads have gone on because the offensive line is being more effective because it's really, really hard to block without pads on. Like, all of this stuff is relevant to this equation, but at the end of the day, the job of NFL quarterback is not just completions. It's completions so that you can get run after catch. And Carson is not only someone who has a lower completion percentage than a lot of NFL quarterbacks that are the upper echelon, but even within those completions, he doesn't necessarily lead receivers into space in a way that makes Terry McLaurin, Curtis Samuel, and Jahan Dotson their most effective selves if he does not increase his accuracy.
The thing about Wentz and his completion percentage, that has been something that has followed him his entire career, even back to the MVP season. He was only completing 61% of his passes. Like, even when he's at his best, he is just not that type of quarterback who is going to go out and have 67% completion percentage. You bring in Carson Wentz and you are attracted to Carson Wentz because of the other stuff. The ability in the arm strength, and the ability to throw from different arm angles, and the ability to fit balls into tight windows, and the ability to open up the vertical portion of his passing game. We know that Carson Wentz is not a perfect product at the quarterback position. My thing is, you have to live with some of the head-scratching stuff because the other stuff and in the high upside stuff is so good.
So here's my question, because when I've asked other people this, they haven't seen it yet. Has the vertical element been there? Both the intermediate, that 15 to 25 yard, 15 to 30 yard range, and the deep, deep stuff. Because from what I've heard, that stuff hasn't really started clicking on the kind of basis that you are expecting it to have a productive offense in the regular season.
Wednesday's practice, I charted every one of his throws in 11 on 11, and I wrote comments next to them. Check down to McGowan. Nice job getting through reads. 25 yard in breaking route to Dotson.
Love that. Can you not read your own handwriting?
No, it's in my notes, and I'm trying to find like the examples of him hitting that the deep ball stuff and the stuff that's
okay,
intermediate.
So far
like,
we got one.
It's happening. Just a little unorganized in my notes here.
Well, no. We're going to have to shift this from Carson to you, bro. Where's your preparation at?
But De'Ami Brown missed on a crossing route. Mm.
Oh, that's look, not ideal.
But I say all that to say, like, it's not like it's not happening. That's where like, I'm getting frustrated
sure.
with. Like,
but that's the thing. And this is like going back to Scott's first question to Carson, consistently inconsistent. Like, some days it's good, some days it's bad. And
but
what
that's
you want,
anybody, that's any quarterback learning
a new
offense.
But the ratio at which it happens is the literal definition of how good you are. How good are you, or how often are you good? How often are you bad? Not how good is your good. Not can you make any one singular throw that is spectacular, or how bad is your bad? Are you bouncing a ball 4 yards short of a guy on a 7 yard cross or a 7 yard slant like he did to Terry McLaurin or whatever that was, where the ball wasn't even close? I know that was Friday. I was there for it. It bounced 25 feet in front of me. It's how consistently do you produce the kind of production that is expected of NFL quarterback? And Carson, last year through 15 games, was pretty good at that, and the last two were disasters. And the year before in Philly was not good, and that's why both those teams traded him. And so far in camp, has he done it often enough on totality? Probably not, but recently,
yes. Dating back to Thursday,
although Friday was the day I was there. He wasn't any good on Friday.
The day before the FedEx practice?
Yeah, that's when I was there, right? Yeah, he wasn't good on that day. I seen it with my own two eyes.
Let me go back to Friday.
All right, well, you're going to check your notes. We're going to talk to Clinton Yates, and we'll resume this at 5:15. It's the Hoffman Show on the Team 980.